This podcast contains mature themes and situations. Listener discretion is advised.
I'm Steve Rickyberg from Geek Cred at geekcred.net, and you're listening to Episode 4 of Murder at Avedon Hill by P.G. Holyfield.
Welcome to the podcast presentation of Murder at Avedon Hill, The Chronicles of Aramis Cragen, written and performed by P.G. Holyfield. Welcome back. As I let you guys know in the last episode, I took last week off to get a few podcasters and friends to sign on to add their voice to the podcast. Murder at Avedon Hill has several characters that appear once or twice during the novel, and as you'll find out much later, the novel takes a definite turn at the end that produces three important cameos. So after releasing episode 3, I sent out the call, and to my utter astonishment, the world responded. So instead of 6 cameos, we've got a full audio drama with over 30 speaking parts. So what's that going to do to this podcast? Well, on the one hand, I have less recording to do myself, which is great. On the other hand, I'll be coordinating a lot of audio from a lot of people. People that, like me, are very busy with their own lives and their own podcasts. But I'm very excited about the talented individuals that are adding their voices to a first-time author's podcast novel. I'm going to wait until next episode before talking about some of the great names that I now owe in various ways. I mean, some of this should be called extortion, but I'll live. One thing is certain, I have a lot more people to meet and shake hands with at DragonCon. There will be some more comments and notes at the end of the episode, including details about a completely unexpected awards nomination. But right now, I want to get to this episode, and before doing that, I want to highlight our guest voices today. First, we have Jack Hosley of Wander Radio, playing the Temple Cleric Holt Livisdawn. Next is Jeff Greiner, host of the RPG podcast The Tome Show, reading the part of Kaj, the town's butcher. In addition, I had two friends, Matt and Denise Lynch, read the parts of Hemming the Baker and his wife, Dally. Thanks to everyone that took part in today's episode. And now, continuing the blatant ripoff of J.C. Hutchins, is the story so far. In episode 3, our two heroes, Aramis Cragen and Aaron Pertee, entered Avedon Hill and made their way to the town's inn. They met Talik Bor, the innkeeper, and Lila, the Jill of all trades, at the inn. Later they met Father Joris, a retired cleric who greeted them less than warmly, with a magic meant to detect an undead presence close to his person. After a short visit with Red Carlson, Aramis's cousin, our two heroes attempted a negotiation with Head Constable Lewis. But the head constable turned Aramis and Aaron away, but not before opening the proverbial door for them. At the end of the chapter, Aramis and Aaron leave Constable Lewis in search of a citizen willing to vouch for them. For a letter of introduction, an accepted opening move within the rules of entreatment is the only way that the monk and the prince will gain entry to Avedon Manor. Chapter 4. Gods and the Undead. The Icon of Artus, the Child of War. Callan will turn her back on the abyss, and Artus will not know himself. The dead will appear, and Doppin will dance with glee. The Third Collected Prophecies of Iberian, Book 2, Chapter 1. Aramis Cragen and Aaron Pertee returned to the path that passed by the temple. This temple was newer than all the structures they had seen in Avedon Hill. There were symbols of the creator, Aj, and some of his children on the temple's outer walls. Aramis, isn't it strange that this is a temple to Aj? Why would the priests of Cairn want a temple to the Father here? Well, this is a trade route, no matter how few people are using it this time of year. So having a temple here is important to the church. Now, why it is a temple to Aj instead of to Iberian? This is just conjecture, of course. But possibly Lord Avedon did not approve of a temple specifically to Iberian. If that were the case, then it would make sense to build a temple to Aj. Why is that? Aj being the father to all his children creates a good compromise when it comes to local and regional temples. The faction that does not desire a temple to Iberian gets their way, yet the priests of Cairn still get a temple that they can, for lack of a better term, control, thus giving their followers another place to pray to the child of prophecy we refer to as Iberian. They now stood before the opening to the main temple sanctuary. The two men saw lamps burning along the interior walls. A partially exposed ceiling left several stone and marble benches unprotected from the elements, but the altar at the back of the temple seemed to be protected from all but the worst weather. Aramis led the way, walking to the rear of the sanctuary. He saw a set of stairs that most likely accessed the temple's bell tower. Aramis ignored the stairs for a moment and called out through a door partially hidden behind the altar, a door that likely opened to the offices of the temple. Father Livesdon, anyone there? A few moments later, a young man came through the opening into the main room behind the altar. He was much younger than both Aramis and Aaron expected. On top of that, he was a small man, and his white robes had not been tailored to fit his size. He ran his hands through his blonde hair and bowed slightly before Aramis and Aaron.
Good day to you. Your faces are not familiar to me. Are you visitors to Avedon Hill?
Aramis answered with a question of his own. You are Father Livesdon.
Yes, I am. And to answer your next questions, I am 24, and neither of my parents are of dwarvish descent.
Aramis bowed in return. I apologize, Father. It was not my intent to be discourteous. Aramis introduced himself and Aaron to the cleric. We spoke earlier to Father Joris. He told us you have only been here a short time.
Yes, 3 weeks now. I am still learning who everyone is here in town, and trying to get things in order here at the temple. I thought you must be visitors.
Father Joris didn't stay on until you were transitioned? Father Livesdon shook his head.
Oh, no. You misunderstand. Father Joris was a great leader here, and was instrumental in getting this temple built. He just hasn't had the time to get me up to speed himself once I arrived.
Time? We met Father Joris. Are you referring to his belief in an undead threat here in town? The cleric led them around to the front of the altar, to one of the benches, and sat down. He motioned for the two men to join him. Aaron remained standing, but moved near Aramis as he sat beside the priest.
Father Joris was an undead hunter for the Brotherhood of Arjun for many years. He believes that the undead walk the earth in greater numbers each day, and that their presence is growing in and around Avedon Hill.
Does Father Joris feel the death of Greta Platt had something to do with this undead threat?
I believe so, but he and I have not spoken as much the last few days. He has found me too inexperienced to be the caretaker of this temple.
Did Father Joris retire on his own accord, or was this a move initiated by the church leadership?
I'm sorry, Aramis, but I am not at liberty to discuss that with you.
Aramis nodded. Of course, Father. Well, what are your views on the death of Greta Platt?
Well, what do you mean?
I'm sorry, Father. My friend and I seek use of the Olvearn Pass, and we have just learned we cannot gain an audience with Lord Avedon until we receive a letter of introduction from someone in town. Lastly, since it seems that Greta Platt's death has affected everything and everyone in this town, we find the need to ask these questions. Father Livesdon thought for a moment before speaking.
Well, I can tell you that there are some questions around how she died. I only know what Constable Lewis described a few days ago. He didn't provide much in the way of details, but apparently Greta lost a great amount of blood when she died. Yet there wasn't blood, or at least much of it, where they found Greta's body.
Father Joris believes it was an undead attack.
A vampire attack, yes.
Have there ever been any vampires in Avedon Hill?
Not to my knowledge, but Father Joris thinks there are now and spends his nights searching for them. But you asked about my views, didn't you?
Irma saw that Father Joris was uncomfortable speaking further about Father Joris. Yes, yes, of course.
Even though I only met Greta Platt on two occasions, I could tell that she was a very intelligent woman, but one who had too heavy a heart for someone so young.
Was she involved with anyone in town?
Involved? Oh, not that I knew about. Again, I only met her twice, and her personal life was not our topic of conversation.
Hermes rose from the bench. Thank you for your time, Father. I know you must be busy. We will see ourselves out.
I wish I could help you with your letter of introduction, Sir Aramis. I'm afraid Lord Avedon would not accept a letter coming from me. It'll be some time before I have earned his respect on that level.
Thank you, Father. One last question, though.
Yes?
Why was this temple dedicated to Aj and not Iberian?
Part of me believes it was so I could be sent here, since I am a priest to our Holy Father Aj. But it was primarily because Father Joris refused to allow a temple to Iberian to be built here.
He wanted a temple to Arjun?
Of course. To care for followers of Arjun at his own temple had to be a life goal for Father Joris. But the Grotian high priest refused, as you might expect. This is a thoroughfare that calls for a temple that can appeal to the most people possible. And a temple to Arjun did not meet that requirement.
So the compromise was to build a temple to Aj.
Yes.
Actually, I have one more question. What about the old temple? It's been many years since I've been through Avedon Hill, but I remember another temple.
Yes, on the western edge of town there was a temple to, well, to Artis. It hasn't been used for many years.
Thanks again, Father. Aramis and Aaron left the temple. You were quiet, Aaron. You're not angry at me, are you? Aaron rolled his eyes. I didn't want to cause any problems. You know how I am with my tone. I still need you thinking and asking questions, Aaron. You're a second set of eyes for me. I'm not as quick-witted as I used to be. That's a good one. Aaron noticed they were moving southwest to a part of town they had not yet visited. Where are we going? Well, I'm thinking there are more merchants in the center of town. Hopefully, we will meet someone who will help us. Aramis, what did Father Livistan mean about the other temple being a temple to Artus? I have heard my mother speak of Artus, but I never learned much about him. Aramis stopped walking, an indication he was about to speak in length on the subject. How can you not know more about Artus? He shook his head. Where to begin? You know of my trials against the priests of Cairn while I was a Rannoch advisor to your grandfather. Yes. Well, what you've shared with me, in any case. You could say that some of my fundamental problems with the priests of Cairn began with their treatment of Artus. Aaron sighed. Lesson time. The initial followers of Iberian grew into what is now known as the priests of Cairn. Iberian, an incarnation of the prophet, one of the children of Aj. Yes. The prophet, the child of Aj that is now known simply as Iberian. As you know, Aj is the father, the creator, but as such he could not walk the land, and it saddened him so much that he cried, and from his tears his children were born. The 10 that walked the land. Aramis smiled. Well, historically speaking, the 10 that became the 11 that became the 10 that walked the land. What? As you know, before Iberian lived, now almost 500 years ago, each race, dwarves, elves, humans, we all had our own pantheon of gods. In studying the myths of the old races and the new, Iberian discovered too many similarities to ignore. All of Cairn's races have myths around a mother or father god of creation. They all have their own myths concerning this creation god's children. These children, no matter the race, came to represent some facet of the first parent deity, whether it be magic, war, trickery, love, etc. Each race also had similar oral and written histories, legends of these children, gods who chose to live on Karen as powerful yet mortal beings in order to affect the events of the world. Each race also shared similar stories of the near destruction of Karen during ancient times by these children. Iberian proposed that, in fact, there is only one pantheon of Karen. He called this theory the principle of inclusion. Aramis nodded. For example, if the child of magic was born into a dwarf clan in the mountains of Anara, he or she, of course, would not be born as an elf. Iberian used the collected stories of all the avatars to build a sort of timeline, proving first to himself that no avatar of the same child, the child of destruction, for example, lived in Karen at the same time. He developed a single pantheon that crossed all the races, naming the creator god Ash, the beginning and the end, and within this pantheon named 10 different children of Ash. So what does this have to do with Artus? Aramis raised a hand. I'm getting there. When Iberian first defined the 10 children of Ash, he only named 10, and the prophet was not one of these 10. Aaron raised a hand, mimicking his teacher. But Artus was. Yes, there was the defined child of destruction, Colin. Yes, and a separate child of war. Aaron finished his thought. Artus. Aaron jumped ahead, thinking only of Iberian. So the priests of Karen created the child of prophecy themselves? Aaron, the topic of discussion is Artus. Iberian collected all of the stories, fables, legends of the gods, no matter the race, and began teaching his own interpretation of the cosmos, that being the story of Aj and his 10 children. Now Artus was known as the warrior, the child of war. There are legends of avatars of Artus in every race.
I thought the warrior incarnation was Colin or Arjun, depending on the story.
That is how it is taught now. But in Iberian's day, there was a distinction between Artus, the child of war, Colin, the child of destruction, and Arjun, the child of protection. Many of the incarnations of Artus are now seen as incarnations of Arjun or Colin. I'm sure Iberian would not be pleased to see how things have changed in this church. Consider how many legends exist that detail Artus, Colin, and Arjun fighting alongside or against each other.
But why? It still doesn't make sense.
No, it does not, does it? Aramis shook his index finger at Aaron's chest. How is it rumored that Iberian's life ended?
It is said that Theroic Ironblade arranged his death.
And what did Theroic Ironblade do during his life?
A look of displeasure crossed Aaron's face. He felt like he was visiting his younger brother's history class. But he answered,
Theroic Ironblade led the armies of man against the demons that poured forth through the cracks of the outworld in what we now call the War of Man. Along with the Elf Queen, Alicia Llewellyn, and her armies of the old races, and with Iberian and his band of demon hunters, Theroic is said to have prevented the destruction of Karen in what we now call the War of Man. Theroic Ironblade. A look of understanding crossed Aaron's face, his displeasure forgotten.
Artus, the child of war.
Yes. Iberian claimed that Theroic was an avatar of Artus, even though the two men privately hated each other. One of the reasons that many of the prophecies of Iberian remain secret to this day is that Iberian wrote long passages about Theroic as the embodiment of Artus.
Aaron finished the thought.
Wait a minute. And after Theroic arranged for Iberian's death, the priests of Cairns eventually removed not only Theroic's mentioned as an avatar, but also removed all teachings of Artus as well?
Exactly.
Okay, I understand that well enough, but what about Iberian? How did he become a child of Ash? During his lifetime of research, Iberian discovered countless stories of mortals that lived extraordinary lives, yet they did not fit within his view of a cosmic pantheon. There have been many prophets in Karen's history, but while Iberian believed in prophecy, especially after the gift began flourishing in him, he did not personally believe that a prophet's connection to the energy that flows from Aj, energy some call the River of Magic, was an indication of a divine lineage.
but Iberian's great works, his part in the War of Man, his bringing together of the old races and the new, even for such a brief time. These were all indicative of one with divine power. It was not long after Iberian's death that his followers, now known as the Priests of Cairn, collected legends of some of the great prophets of Cairn and added the Child of Prophecy as one of the children of Aj. It was only fitting for them that they named this child Iberian. So what began as the 10 became the 11 once the Priests of Cairn solidified its position as the religious power center of Cairn. And soon after it became clear that Theroic was most likely behind Iberian's murder, the 11 soon became the 10. Now, even though the Priests of Cairn struck the name of Artus from their own canon, Artus was still worshipped extensively across Cairn, especially by the remaining dwarven and human barbarian clans of western and central Inara. Only in the last century has the open worship of Artus come to an end. Most temples to Artus were converted to temples of Arjun, Kalin, or even Iberian. The two men made their way to a grouping of structures that represented the town's circle. Before them were two buildings in particular, one that looked to be a butcher's shop, and on the opposite side of the street, a bakery.
Where to first, Aaron?
The butcher first. By the time we're done there, I'll be hungry for some pastry.
Good choice.
A moment later, they were both standing in the butcher shop, ringing the service bell.
Yes, yes. Who is it?
A giant of a man walked out of the back room, brandishing a cleaver so large that it could easily be mistaken for a war axe. He took the cleaver and slammed it into the thick wood table that separated him from his two visitors. From the various notches on the table, it seemed this was his usual storage place for his tool of choice.
Good morning, sir. We are visitors to your town, and we were wondering if you might do us a favor.
Favor? You interested in some meats, friend? I've got the largest larder this side of the fields of Alindus.
Aramis was not one to lie.
Not at the moment, but definitely later. We were wondering if you could help us. We need to gain an audience with Lord Avedon. If he allows us to use the Oviarn Pass, we would be beholden to you, and we'll purchase provisions from you before we leave.
The man's single eyebrow, seemingly out of place when seen just below his shaved head, moved down closer to his eyes as he pursed his lips.
Listen, Lord Avedon may love his meats, but I'm not one who can get you in to see him, if that's what you're looking for.
Yes, Constable Lewis said we need a letter of introduction.
Well, you are certainly wasting your time here. You write a letter, I can sign my name to it, but that's about all the letters I got in me, and you'd be wasting good parchment. Sorry.
Thank you for your honesty, Kaj. We will be back.
Sure you will. Well, if you do stay, be sure to try the Olvieran whitetail stew at the inn. The venison is fresh.
Thanks for the tip, Aaron said as they left the shop. Their next stop was the bakery. There they met Hemming, the town's baker. They spotted at least two women through the doors that led to where the many breads and pastries were baked. The smells wafting into the bakery's common area were a delightful welcome for Aramis.
Well, well, what have we here? A cleric and his forest guide, perhaps? What can we do for you today? Cakes? Bread?
Hemming looked to be about 40 years of age, with an engaging smile and bushy eyebrows tinged with flour. What is this? Aaron asked, pointing to one of the many pastries on display.
Oh, that, my friend, is a wilderberry tort. One of my specialties. Here.
Hemming pulled out a tort and cut it in half, giving the pieces to Aaron and Aramis.
Oh, don't worry. This is just a sample. Is Lord Avedon allowing people into town now? I have to get to work if that's the case.
It didn't look as if Hemming could bake any more than he already had. Aramis explained who they were and that Lord Avedon had not opened the town gates. The baker's happiness gradually wore away as they explained their situation.
I was hoping Lord Avedon had started to put all this behind him. Greta's death was such a waste.
A woman around Hemming's age came through the door from the back of the bakery, obviously overhearing their conversation.
Yet our lives must go on. Come now, Hemming. We have to get this order done for the manor. Are you done with these gentlemen?
The woman exited as quickly as she had entered the room.
My wife, Dally. What can I box up for you? How about a pie? I've got 6 kinds right over here.
Just a couple of the torts, Hemming, thank you. Aaron looked over with an unsatisfied expression, obviously wanting more. Aramis explained their situation and their need for a letter of introduction.
Ah, I see now why you are here. I'm afraid that I can't be of much help to you, unless, of course, you think some breads and cakes might get you through the manor gates.
They thanked Hemming for his time and left the bakery. Aaron tore into his tort with a bit of anger.
What are we going to do now? No one here is going to help us. Either they're scared of Lord Avedon, or they just don't care about our problem.
Aramis led them further southwest, until they stopped before a small house. The whitewashed, one-level home was different than many of the structures they had seen thus far, as it was surrounded by large gardens. Aramis spotted several varieties of uncommon herbs and other plant life. There was a sign above the front door to the house that read, Marissa, Town Herbalist.
All we can do is keep trying, Aaron. Right now, though, I think we need a doctor.
Cutting-edge technology? Are you the first in line for the latest sci-fi movie? Do you stay up late at night playing video games? Do you consider being called a geek a badge of honor? Then you should listen to Geek Cred. Steve Rickyberg gives you the inside scoop on everything geek, from tech to sci-fi to games, you name it, we geek it. Geek Cred. Are you geek enough? To download and subscribe, visit www.geekcred.net and get your geek on.
Okay, we're back, and thanks for sticking around. Just wanted to tell you, I have been so thrilled with the positive feedback I've been getting for Murder at Avedon Hill. And after our next episode, episode 5, if I don't have you hooked, it won't be over a lack of trying. Next time, we have 2 great voices from podcast fiction, Christian Ellis and Matthew Wayne Selznick. In addition, we'll see the first real action in the novel, at least since the death of Greta Platt. But before we go, I wanted to share some great news. Last year, I decided to do a podcast related to NaNoWriMo. I wanted to do something before starting the podcast novel. For those of you that don't know, NaNoWriMo stands for National Novel Writing Month, which is November each year. And there's a great coordinated effort led by Chris Batty and the good folks over at NaNoWriMo.org to have as many writers attempt to write 50 words. That would be the easiest contest ever. Write 50,000 words in 30 days. At first, I was going to do this as a correspondent for The Roundtable, a great podcast over at harpingmonkey.com. KJ Johnson, Chris Miller were also attempting Nano, and they thought a podcast was a good idea as well. And once I learned that Mer Lafferty was going to do Nano as well, I asked her if she wanted to join in the fun. Chris Miller organized the show, which we called the Nano Monkeys. I did some interviews with writers such as J.C. Hutchins and Lonnie Azell, and the 4 of us did short 5-minute segments about writing that were meant to support and hopefully motivate the participants of NaNoWriMo. I did my small part, but Chris Miller and Murr were the shining stars of the podcast, as you would expect. I enjoyed it immensely, but when it was over, I didn't think about it again until this past week when I found out that the NaNoMonkeys podcast was nominated for a Parsec Award. So as if I didn't have enough to look forward to at DragonCon this year, now I have an award ceremony to attend and hardware to win, or at least steal by the end of the night. Chris is a big guy, after all, and if Mer wins, for I should be writing, I'll just distract her with some pie or something. Anyway, until next time, thanks for listening.
Ah, welcome, welcome. Come on in, please, please. Have a seat, warm yourself by the fire, and listen to the friendly minstrel's song. What? You've come seeking the tome? Well, you are in luck. I am the keeper of the tome.
And what would you do with this mighty podcast? Oh, good, good. You have the right idea. You see, the tome is a source for expanding your understanding of Dungeons and Dragons and what various books have to offer. The tome's knowledge is endless when it comes to Dungeons and Dragons. So sit, listen, and become a sage of great renown. The Tome is a Dungeons & Dragons review podcast focused on official content. You can find The Tome at http://thetome.podbean.com or search for The Tome on iTunes.
Well, I say, is that you, Wentworth, old fellow?
Indeed it is, my God. Is that you, Radcliffe? Well, I haven't seen you in years. How in the name of sunglasses are you, my good man?
Well, very good, you old scallywag. What have you been up to these past 15 years?
Been busy as hell since I retired from the dance troupe.
Right.
But I have been listening to the PBC.
Hmm. PBC? What in the name of kitchen utensils is the PBC? It's an audio interview podcast where
host Chris Moody interviews audiobook authors.
You're not joking with me, you old codger, are you? I don't think my heart could withstand such folly.
Not in the slightest, you cantankerous crony. Just check out audiobookchat.chrismoody.net. It's so easy, even a Luddite like you can find it.
Well, I say, you old fart. I guess I'll soon be checking out audiobookchat.chrismoody.net. Stupendous. Any other recommendations before I head out, Sal?
Certainly. Be sure to check out andycast.net, home of the uninformed biography and the Andycast podcast.
Jolly good show. Thank you, my good man.
My pleasure, you renegade retiree. Be sure to bounce to audiobookchat.chrismoody.net for fantastic interviews of authors who have chosen to get their work released in serial audio format. That's audiobookchat.chrismoody.net.
You've been listening to Murder at Avedon Hill, a podcast novel written and performed by the author. Please visit pgholyfield.com for more information on this novel and the author. Most of the music in this podcast provided by Shira Common through Magnatune.com. Magnatune.com, they are not evil. Additional music generously provided by Kevin MacLeod through Incompetech.com. This podcast is copyright 2007, PG Holyfield, and is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives 2.5 license.